to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the Political Cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
And welcome back to the Political Cesspool. James Edwards joining this program in progress. It's Saturday evening, October 29th. I'm coming to you tonight from Nashville, Tennessee. A meeting that I was speaking to today. Bill Rowland, of course, as you know, for those of you who were tuned into the first hour, joining you from our flagship station tonight where he still sits, AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee. Going out tonight to the AM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network, and as always, streaming online at thepoliticalcesspool.org. So, Bill, as I said, I was tied up in a meeting. In fact, the meeting's still going. I'm foregoing And for me, this is outrageous, you know, because I'm a McDonald's, Burger King type of guy. I'm foregoing a $55 steak dinner tonight to join our friends on the radio program. And let me tell you, there's no place I'd rather be. But I did miss the first hour. I didn't want to cut out too early and be rude. So how'd the first hour go with Alana Mercer?
Very lively, James. Alana Mercer was, as always, a very interesting and informed guest. And she and Keith had a very lively discussion in the second half hour of the first hour. So it was a very good interview. We had our small technical problems, but otherwise, really, I think one for the record books.
Well, outstanding. I look forward to listening to it. And, of course, I guess for the people who have been tuned into the show, unlike the host of the program itself, I didn't have a chance to listen to it. But I do, of course, look forward to doing so in the broadcast archives, which are available to everyone, of course, at the end of each show at thepoliticalcesspool.org. So you say lively, Bill. Does that translate into controversial, or does lively just mean lively?
I'll just say that Alana and Keith didn't agree on every point, and so the discussion got a little lively when it came to talking about racial consciousness among whites and the individuality among whites, and Alana taking the side of, well, really, we're individualists, and you know, we treasure our individuality, and Keith said, but we need to raise racial consciousness, and so it was a lively discussion. I won't say a debate, but certainly... something wasn't exactly just a mutual fanny padding session, but that's good. I mean, it was really good. It shows that we take differing opinions seriously, and we give them full coverage on the show
while still being cordial, I'm sure.
Well, yes. Of course, there was no temper flares. There was no smackdowns or anything like that.
You're basically indulging my questions, and everyone else in the country's already listened to it. And here I am calling in to find out what happened. But nevertheless, I'm sure it was a great hour of talk radio, and I appreciate you and Keith for making it happen. Of course, the big story as far as the political festival concerned this week is the fallout from the interview we had a week ago tonight, which is, of course, the Pat Buchanan interview, and we're going to talk more about that this hour, but rather than talk about our interview with a former presidential frontrunner, Bill, one of the current presidential frontrunners, if you believe the polls, at least as far as the GOP is concerned, was in not just Memphis, but our little suburban enclave of Bartlett, Tennessee, a couple of weeks ago, and that is none other than Herman Cain. Herman Cain appearing in town within walking distance of where we live. So we're going to talk about Herman Cain tonight. He made a visit. He's making news, and so now he's making news on the political festival, Bill, and I know this is certainly a topic you've been wanting to cover. What do you have to say?
Herman Cain's front-runner status is every bit as contrived and manufactured as the front-running status of a number of candidates that have already passed through the waters of this Republican GOP nomination process. And, of course, it started out that Mitt Romney was unbeatable, and then the cup was passed to Michelle Bachmann, and it's gone to Donald Trump. And, you know, it's this this sort of creating a mass of lemmings in front of the television viewers in the United States to try to establish that the Republicans can't pick a candidate. The everyone's choice apparently in the Republican Party was Christie of New Jersey, but he has insisted he is not going to run. We'll wait and see. I don't think he will. But nevertheless, the latest fad, the latest trend is for Herman Cain. And of course, the claims are being made that he is the Tea Party candidate. He represents the Tea Party. But of course, he was unheard of before very recently. You know, just a couple of months ago, Herman Cain was down scraping the bottom with Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum and some of the others, drawing 2 or 3% of support. And now all of a sudden, he's the front runner. Well, of course, this is an entirely contrived situation. Herman Cain is no more eligible nor qualified to be president than Barack Obama. That doesn't mean he won't get elected. It simply means he's not qualified. And by that, I mean his political stand is fairly recent. There are some things about his political stances that will disturb a lot of conservatives. And, you know, I think that needs to be brought out on the air. I think we need to discuss Herman Cain and the fact that the real reason, of course, that he is the front runner is because he's been selected. And we're going to talk about the group who selected him also.
Well, and you look at Herman Cain, and of course, I'm sure people tuning in tonight, well, there's the political cesspool again. They're opposing him just because he's black. Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is he really has no qualifications whatsoever to serve as president of the United States. He ran a business, and according to many reports, not very well. He was, you know, the godfather pizza baron for a couple of years. And other than that, he's been a talk radio host briefly in Atlanta. Never been elected to office in any shape, form, or fashion, and now he is at least arguably leading the entire Republican pack of candidates, which includes vastly superior men like Ron Paul. And to me, obviously, as you said, Bill, it's very contrived. I mean, the GOP's tried this before with Alan Keyes. We're going to run a conservative, or at least assumably a conservative, you know, black guy, because this way, you know, we're going to be able to absolve ourselves of the accusations of racism. We saw what happened when Alan Keyes ran against Barack Obama. He got ran over, and certainly that would happen again, unless, of course, that is the point that the powers that be are looking for, is to put a you know, the one person, to nominate the one person that certainly couldn't compete with Obama, and that would be, in this case, Herman Cain. Now, but still, you have many of these Tea Party types who say, oh, my goodness, this is a great conservative. And, of course, I believe, again, they are rallying behind him because this is the, you know, the black guy, and they can prove that they're not racist by supporting the black guy, and that this is the biggest thing he has going for him. I mean, if he was a white candidate with those credentials and his, you know, ability to articulate the issues, he would never be allowed to participate in the national debates. Am I wrong, Bill?
No, you're absolutely right. And the fact is, we're going to get into the Herman Cain phenomenon and how it came about and who's really behind it. But just remember, of course, that several candidates have been through these spikes of popularity and then have diminished very quickly. But I think Herman Cain has got traction because he is being backed by the liberal establishment, because they know deep down that when it comes to the election, there'll be great voter apathy over Herman Cain in the long run. And so they are fixing the numbers for Herman Cain. I don't believe polls anymore at all. But we'll talk more about this after the break.
There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages. When the truth is found to be... Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. James Edwards coming to you tonight from Nashville. Bill Rowland holding down the fort there at our home base, 1380 AM WLRM. Bill's in downtown Memphis last night. This is a true story, Bill. I don't even know, with you being in the studio tonight, if you've noticed this yet, but I want to share it for the audience before we get back to Herman Cain. I was talking with our station manager here at the local, at our local station in Memphis a couple of days ago, and he was very excited about, as we have been, of course, about all of the publicity generated from Pat Buchanan's appearance last week. And we were talking about that for a few minutes along with some other matters, and then the conversation segued into the violence that has been occurring on Bill Street recently. And, of course, our station is located on Bill Street, which is the Bourbon Street of Memphis, where all the bars are. It's the entertainment district. It's right there where the professional basketball team plays. It's where everybody goes when they go downtown. But it's very diverse, so hence it's very violent. And as you know, Bill, in recent weeks, there has been a rash of shootings that have taken place on Bill Street. And I was talking to, again, our local station manager about that, and he shared a story with me that even I didn't know. If you go down the hall to Dave's office, he said there's a bullet hole in the window. One of the shootings actually penetrated our radio station. Of course, it happened in the overnight hours, you know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock on a Saturday morning, I guess, or a Sunday morning. And sure enough, there it is. So if you go down and you open Dave's door and you feel a draft, that's the reason why bullet holes riddled now at 1380. Your thoughts, Bill, before we get back to Kane. I guess Herman Kane maybe can fix that.
Racial violence literally strikes home with the political stress cesspool. The bullets are coming through the windows on us now. But Herman Kane can't fix anything. Herman Kane is not going to fix anything. Herman Kane is merely a prop or a figurehead for a movement or a political game and scheme that was hatched in Florida. The first straw poll that Herman Kane ever won was in Florida. Now, since that time, Ron Paul won the straw poll in Ohio. No coverage of that. Zero. But when Herman Kane won the straw poll in Florida out of nowhere, suddenly he's vaulted into this high position within the Republican process.
If you listen
process.
To them and these what I believe to be the manipulated poll numbers, 30%, according to some polls, 30% because he wins Florida, a straw poll that I didn't even know existed?
No, and only 900 odd people actually took part in that straw poll, which indicates that that is not a legitimate number to consider with so low a result. Now, of course, you know, you have to pay to be in a straw poll. I think it's $30 to participate. So somebody put up the money for that. And the people who put up the money for that are the Republicans is the Republican Committee in Florida, which the headquarters, the center of power, is located in Palm Beach. And Palm Beach Republican Committee is very heavily Jewish, very heavily liberal. And
Palm
so,
Beach, where all those nice Jewish folks voted for Pat Buchanan and gave Bush the election in 2000.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that their interests obviously have come down to putting someone in the race or getting someone in the race who is going to completely be the antithesis of what Ron Paul is talking about and some of the other more conservatives. You know, basically Herman Kane, when I see him, he's just a loudmouth. He just comes off as a loudmouth. I saw one interview with him where he was trying to explain his much ballyhooed and much publicized 999 program. And in this interview, he couldn't even explain it himself. He couldn't answer questions about his own plan for revising the tax code and changing taxes.
This is the point. And this is what I have to say about this. My opposition to Kane stems from he's totally unqualified to hold the office. And I think the only reason he's being humored is because he's black. I think, you know, quite rightly, if such an unqualified white candidate professed that he was running for president, they'd be laughed off. But you can't hardly laugh off this guy, because if you do, you're going to be considered a racist. Or it's even more nefarious than that, and they're purposefully trying to build him up to destroy, you know, the opposition to Obama. But I've got to believe that once the Novelty Act wears off, and if he can continue to solidify his supposed front-runner status, and they have to eventually start asking him serious policy questions, surely at that point his campaign will disintegrate, because I just don't think there's enough there that he has enough ability to continue this charade for much longer. But maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I could be wrong, because I might be overestimating the intelligence of the American voter in this case, but we'll see.
Well, as I said, those numbers are entirely fictional, and I can say that with confidence because, as you know, James, when Herman Kane made his visit here in Bartlett, now this is the candidate that's supposed to be getting 30% of support from Republicans right now.
I'm glad you're bringing this up. I know where you're going. Continue on.
How many people showed up to see Herman Cain? How many people turned out to show their dedication and devotion to Herman Cain? Of all the Tea Party people here in Memphis, and there are a lot of them, how many turned out to welcome Herman Cain to Bartlett and to really show it? 30 people.
That's
30
right.
30 people.
30 now, people. Now, you know, when Buchanan,
that's not a mandate.
When Pat Buchanan came to Memphis in the 1996 primaries, when he had a very realistic shot of winning the Republican nomination, he was selling out arenas. Ladies and gentlemen, selling out, I say selling out, I mean, you know, obviously it was free to come see him, but he was packing arenas, basketball arenas. The Shelby Farm Showplace Arena, you know, was full there, Bill, for Pat in 96. And so Herman Cain arguably has higher poll numbers than even Pat had in that year. And of course, this is the story you didn't read about Herman Cain in any of the national news coverage, is that he came, was supposed to, this, you know, Republican front runner comes to a very large American city, Memphis, and draws 30 people. Well, you didn't read about that, did you?
The numbers don't add up. And here's the facts of the matter. And American people need to wake up to this. Polls are being rigged. You know, committees are being rigged. And elections are being rigged in this country. And now you talk about Pat Buchanan. I have another source of information on Pat Buchanan when he ran for president against Dole. And what in Georgia, in Atlanta, Georgia, Pat Buchanan held a rally there that drew 1,500 people to an arena that only held, I think, 1,200, whatever, however many the numbers were. The arena was packed. The crowd was overflowing onto the sidewalks in the street, probably another several hundred or a thousand people to see Pat Buchanan speak. Dole held a similar meeting in Georgia, drew 200 people, and yet he was the Republican nominee.
Ran away with in a landslide in Georgia in the Georgia primary.
Exactly, and so the numbers. And here's another case about Georgia. And I'm going to be very blunt about this, and again tie it in with how elections are rigged in this country. There were two Georgia politicians who had been elected in majority black districts, overwhelmingly black districts, both named McKinney, father and daughter. One was a state representative, the other was a congresswoman, Cynthia McKinney. Well,
right.
When the state representative McKinney came out with criticism against the Jews, and his daughter came out with criticism against the Jews, they both lost their elections, even though Representative McKinney of Georgia, Cynthia's father, had been in office for many years. And as you know, James, as we know, blacks will reelect the same representative just short of, even if he goes to prison.
And they won't just do that, Bill. In Memphis, it's a family heirloom.
Exactly.
Something that's passed down as a birthright. Literally, there have been black families in Memphis, in these districts that are majority black, who not only do they serve in that seat, they hold that seat for a lifetime, regardless of who runs against them. It then gets passed down to their kids who run it, and then their kids, and this has happened. And again, you know, this is, you know, obviously
James,
the same mentality that elected
James,
Obama. Yeah.
We got a break coming up, and we'll be right back. James Edwards and Bill Rowland on the Political Cesspool.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the Political Cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back to the show. James Edwards, Bill Rowland. I'm a little bit down the road from Bill today in Nashville, attending a speaking engagement. I'm back on the road, ladies and gentlemen. No rest for the weary here. Bill in our flagship studio. That's heavy one bullet hole as a result of diversity in Memphis. But together we're making it happen tonight, and of course in the first hour, guest Alana Mercer joined Bill and Keith for apparently a riveting hour of talk radio. But Bill, our friend Sam Bushman at the network informed me during the commercial break that you mentioned, of course, that Ron Paul won Ohio. 11 million people live in Ohio, and so he wins this state's straw poll. Herman Cain wins Florida. 18 million people live in Florida. Ron Paul also recently won the California Republican straw poll bill, and this was something that was just brought to my attention, something that I did not know 5 minutes ago. The state of California has 37 million people, and so anyway, you combine the two that Paul has won, Ohio and California, you got 48 million Americans, and yet you hear nothing about it. And Herman Cain wins Florida, not only do you hear everything about it, it propels him to apparent front-runner status. It seems as though the state of California, with twice as many people, would be at least half as big of the story. And people are saying, you know, again, Bill, we expect there to be a slightly larger audience this week as a result of all the publicity we've gotten. And if people are coming to check us out for the first time, they're going to say, oh, I read about you guys. You know, you're just opposing Herman Cain because he's black. Well, I'll tell you this. You know, if Ron Paul was black, I would support his message. Absolutely. In fact, as we were talking about during the break, I wish he was black in some regards, because then he wouldn't be ignored. If Ron Paul was black, he would be your nominee.
Well, I don't believe any of that. I don't believe that that's legitimate, because all of these a legitimate argument, because all of the black candidates who have posed themselves as big conservatives and representing the Christian right and so forth have all played the race card at some point in their careers, single one of them. And that includes Clarence Thomas, who famously said during his confirmation hearing that he was the victim of a media lynch mob or a media lynching. They all play the race card when it comes to their own interests. And by that, I mean, if they're under attack, if they're being criticized, out comes the race card. You're just saying that about me because I'm black. And let's take a look at Herman Cain in that regard. What did Herman Cain, what was his main attack point against Rick Perry? That Rick Perry had a rock that was painted, that had the N-word painted on it in front of a club or some sort of hunting lodge where he was a member. So this was the big attack against Rick Perry, was the N-word written on a rock.
That's right. That's right.
So they play the race card. So no, I don't believe there is a black. I don't believe there is a black Ron Paul any more than there's a white Barack Obama.
No, there's not. Well, this is and we talked about this earlier this afternoon, Bill, several hours in advance of the interview, and I said we would depart and visit Fantasyland for a moment. And, of course, it's completely hypothetical. It's never happened. At least there's never been a black candidate that I've seen that would, refrain from playing the race card, as you say, and put the interests of white people first, or the interests of America first, as far as that goes. And, you know, so obviously that candidates never exist, probably would never exist. But, again, if you're in complete fantasy land, if we could create such a candidate, I could probably more easily support him than a candidate like Bush or Kerry, who certainly has caused, you know, great damage to America's founding stock. But, again, that's so far removed from reality, it's probably irrelevant to even discuss it. But just for the sake of argument, I'll offer that out there. But, Herman Cain, so where do you see this ending up, Bill? Where do you see the Republican primaries playing out? I know it's hard to grab that crystal ball and give us a forecast, because politics is very nonlinear. It changes daily, and it will continue to. But the primaries are right around the corner. We're at the end of this year. They're going to start up in January. So what happened? How does this play out in your mind? Because you did, I will give you the credit, my friend, certainly called many things accurately around this time in 2008. You called a lot of things months in advance that panned out, and I think we had a better track record than any of the establishment pundits when it came to making predictions on primaries. So I go to you again for this.
Well, let me say, first of all, that liberal Democrats and liberals are much more predictable than so-called conservative Republicans, who seem to be, have some sort of syndrome that leads them into so many different directions. They don't know where they're going themselves. But that being said, I don't think Herman Cain is a viable candidate. I don't think the Republicans will necessarily wake up to that fact, but it's going to be a very, very heated nomination process. And I think it's going to come down to the fact that all of these candidates that have emerged, from Bachman down to Herman Cain, all have been put up to stop the momentum of Ron Paul. that is the purpose of all of this confusion and these candidates jumping in, jumping out. Even Newt Gingrich supposedly went up in the poll numbers out of nowhere. Newt Gingrich has no money, he has no support, and yet all of a sudden he too is being pushed up because he's an establishment lapdog, and of course they're going to push him forward, even though all of it is just to create more confusion. Basically, the group that's pushing Herman Cain does not want a viable Republican nominee. I think they see Mitt Romney as being too dull and too Mormon to win the nomination. He's also basically an establishment liberal. I mean, he's a liberal Republican. They call him a moderate, but he's a liberal. But let's talk about Herman Cain's positions now. Remember, Herman Cain is being touted as the great conservative alternative, the Tea Party candidate against people like Perry and Romney and some of the others.
Even though anybody that's ever been to a Tea Party rally knows that they are almost to a man behind Ron Paul.
And almost to a man white. I mean, very few blacks except some celebrity tokens, and I'm not going to call them, but this is what they were, who were put up to make it appear that it was a multicultural event. But every Tea Party event I ever went to was so white that, you know, it looked like my family reunion. But the point is that Herman Cain's positions are not that conservative. First of all, he's against repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That is that, and his reason was, he goes, well, we don't want to disrupt the military. Well,
right.
What do you think homosexuality is going to do to the military? It's going to create a complete mess of the military. There are going to be so many issues with open homosexuals in the military that it's going to be mind-boggling. Morale is going to go down. There'll be conflicts over sexual harassment and soldiers that are going to be approached and fondled by homosexuals, and then there are going to be fights and probably killings over this. So, you know, Herman Cain's against that. So he's in favor, basically, of open homosexuality in the military.
Which wasn't the case a couple of years ago. As with any politician, he has his finger stuck firmly in midair to test the winds. And, you know, back when it looked as though we were going to be able to at least delay the inevitable march of so-called homosexual rights right over the face of Christian America, Herman Cain was very much opposed to it. Now that it's passed, now that it's law, he doesn't want to disrupt the military, quote unquote.
Well, another issue is abortion. I mean, he's taken a sort of middle stand on abortion, you know, has one foot against abortion and one foot for abortion. Now, I don't know, where this issue stands now with the American people, just like with homosexuality, but certainly most conservatives, real conservatives, are opposed to abortion. And Herman Cain has made the exceptions for rape and incest and so forth. But those exceptions are so rare that they're almost non-existent. Pregnancies occurring from rape and incest. By rape, I mean legitimate rape, forced rape, and incest. These are tiny, tiny statistics compared with the millions of babies being aborted as a method of birth control. So, Herman Cain's stand on that is very weak. And you can be sure that his stand on issues that really involve race are going to be equally ambivalent. Certainly affirmative action, civil rights and things like that. I mean, I'm sure he's going to give us a lovely speech about Martin Luther King and how great he was at some point. Of course, the white candidates do that too.
They do, but I think the bottom line is, and I guess we're speaking to the choir, or preaching to the choir, when we're talking about Herman Cain to this audience, but still, we need to arm them with the talking points that they can take to their, marginally conservative friends or family member who think that it's such a great idea to oppose Obama with a supposedly conservative black guy because it absolves the accusation of racism from the campaign, which is just, a fool's errand. And so the bottom line is that, look, Herman Cain is not qualified to be president by any way. Even if he were, even if he had somehow managed to be elected to Congress or Senate somewhere, he's still vastly inferior to Ron Paul, which is, let's not, split hairs here. I think everyone listening to this show tonight should vote for Ron Paul, for president. I don't think there's any other choice. He is by far the best choice that has a chance, and I hate to use that whole caveat, has a chance to win, because, of course, that disqualified Pat, even though these are the people I always vote for. So Ron Paul should be the guy.
Okay, we're at a break, James. I hate to cut you off. We'll be right back after these messages. Bill Roland, James Edwards, Political Cesspool.
Cesspool, guys. We'll be back right after these messages.
return. We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Falling into the trap, James Edwards and Bill Rowland here in the political cesspool, giving Herman Cain far much more of a portion of our pie than he deserves tonight. But anyway... Bill, you know, a bigger story even than Herman Cain, as far as we're concerned, is the fallout from our blockbuster interview last week with none other than a legitimate presidential contender, at least at one time, Pat Buchanan. And I know you're going to be bowing out, Bill, at the end of this hour. I will continue coverage of this fallout as we go into the third hour, and I certainly have a lot to bring to your attention tonight during the third hour. Before Bill leaves us this evening, I certainly want to give him the floor on the program tonight to share with the listening audience his thoughts on everything that's happened since a week ago tonight. Bill.
Well, James, I'm gonna disagree with you on one thing. I don't think it was a media fallout. I think it was a media cannon shot. Frankly, I think that the media giving attention to Pat Buchanan was one of the biggest mistakes they ever made, because what did Pat do? Instead of tucking his tail between his legs, going to his knees and apologizing for appearing on this scary, horrible radio show, he stood his ground. And because he stood his ground, you'll notice a definite deflation of the media attention that he was getting. And that's because he stood up to them. And they don't and will not, they will not have anybody in the media spotlight who's fighting back, who's counterpunching the liberal establishment. And so, you know, I think that the media extravaganza has fallen off because Pat stood his ground. And that's the smartest thing anybody can do, as we know, that when you stand your ground, the liberals back off because they're cowards. And the only thing they want to do is to bully and intimidate people. And when that fails, they're going to run and hide. They're going to pretend you never existed. And Pat certainly did that. And I think, of course, by the attention the show has gotten, we hope we picked up some listeners. We hope that you know, that will reflect on our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org. But nevertheless, I think it's been a great thing, I think it's a real hand grenade in the lap of the liberal media to have Pat Buchanan come out so strongly defending himself on this show and standing up for what he wrote his book.
And of course, ladies and gentlemen, I'll be recapping very briefly. I mean, we're not going to overindulge in this, although I think we're certainly entitled to a victory lap, because this was quite a coup. And Buchanan and the cesspool combining certainly always makes news. It has during his previous two appearances, and the third time was no exception. In fact, it was a little bit heightened. And again, I'll be covering some of this during the third hour, maybe for a segment, before I move on to other matters. But, you know, the book is out, and it debuted, I'm sure, as a result, not obviously exclusively for the help that we gave, but perhaps we were able to move a few more units. His book debuted this week at number 3 on the best-selling charts for hardcover nonfiction, and obviously that's a very good showing. And I think certainly he's benefited by millions of dollars worth of publicity as a result of a single 25-minute interview that he did last week. And folks, if you haven't heard that interview yet, I'm going to give you two chores this evening. If you haven't heard the interview yet, I encourage you to do so at your earliest possible occasion at thepoliticalcesspool.org, and if you haven't read the book yet or ordered it yet through us or through Amazon or through your local bookstore, Suicide of a Superpower, Will America Survive to 2025, I think we owe Pat a $20 sale. I think each of the members of the listening audience owe him a $20 book order as a result of the great gift he gave not only to our program last week, but to our paleoconservative ideas in general, by defending us on National Public Radio, which went out to 160 stations across the country. He defended us quite eloquently. Again, more details coming in the third hour. And not only did he defend this bill, but he went on the attack against the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center, among other various left-wing ne'er-do-wells.
That's true. And the thing is that this is a real a real sea change in the discourse in this country regarding race and ethnicity and the dire future for white people if the demographics don't change. And I think Pat Buchanan is finally coming out and swinging with both fists about this because it's the truth. Now, of course, we had Elena Mercer on in the first hour, and Elena was arguing that we cannot build a movement around racialists, and that because people in the West are so individualistic and so independent. Well, you know, we may not have a choice. I mean, you know, what happened in South Africa, what happened in Rhodesia, what's happening in England, what's happening in various countries around the world where there are ethnic conflicts is that the ethnic majority, or the most militant among ethnic groups, will take advantage, exploit, and dominate the ethnic minorities or the ethnic groups that do not have racial consciousness. And this is an irreducible equation, that if a group has racial consciousness or ethnic consciousness, they work together for their own best interest. Individuals with independent thoughts, individuality, only work for themselves. And they sacrifice their own people in doing so. So I don't know that we have a choice of whether or not we develop a racial consciousness.
Well, it's just simply a natural law. I mean, anyone who's seen Daktari knows the weaker animal always goes in the end. And it might not be the way it should be, but it's the way it is. And we can either play the game by the way it is or the way we'd like it to be. And if we play it by the way we like it to be, then we're going to be at the bottom of the food chain if we're not absolutely eradicated within, I think, several hundred more years. That could literally be the reality of the end game of this if we don't develop a sense of racial consciousness very similar to that which all of the minorities have. And as I said with Pat Buchanan, not only they have it, they are encouraged to have it by the establishment media. Of course, only we are the ones who are stigmatized when we try to adopt the same instincts that they have. But, you know, we're very close to becoming a minority here now, as we know, within the next couple of decades, if that long. I'm talking about in the distant future. I mean, you could literally get to a point where the sun sets on white people completely, unless, and again, not at the expense of anyone, but certainly there's enough room in the world for those who are interested in having it. I mean, if people want diversity, God bless them, let them go explore it, let them go live it. Let them go to South Africa and experience it. Let them go to the Congo and revel in it. But for those of us who think that we would like to appreciate different cultures from afar and with regards to where we live and with whom we associate and work with, we would like our own ethnostate, let that be explored as well. And certainly we ought to have that right.
Well, diversity with regards to white people, it reminds me of something that Groucho Marx said. He said he wouldn't belong to any club that would have him as a member. And so whites seem to have the mentality is they as desperately as they might want to belong to diversity, they won't join any club that won't have them as a member. And this is the whole point of the diversity multiculturalism movement, is not inclusion of different races, it's the exclusion of whites and the exploitation of whites for resources in order to promote diversity and multiculturalism, which only benefits minorities. But, you know, James, the time is going to come when a certain desperation enters white people, when our own children become menaced, and this is already happening in many cities, and there is a bunker mentality among whites that we've got to dig in and defend ourselves. And I made a dire prediction a number of years ago that if the atomic bomb was ever dropped again by the United States, we'd drop it on our own cities. And, you know, that may sound crazy to a lot of people, but my point is that when any situation becomes so desperate that there is no alternative except terrific and terrible violence, then that's what will take place. That is the entire flow of history is about episodes of violence caused by desperation or conflicting groups. And, you know, white people have got to realize that we need to protect our interests now before we reach that stage, because if that stage is reached, there's going to be, as Enoch Powell said, rivers running with blood.
Well, and again, that's why this radio program exists, ladies and gentlemen, because we don't want that reality for our families. And so, you know, it might be, quote-unquote, politically incorrect for us to speak these ideas in polite company, but it's truly what's right for all Americans, that which we advocate. And, you know, because we defy the false gods of cultural Marxism, we have to endure conditions that we wouldn't wish upon a dog. But nevertheless, here we are doing, I think, and I want to sound sensational, and I want to sound self-righteous, but I think, Bill, in many ways, we are doing God's work in the political realm. Would you agree or disagree?
Oh, well, absolutely, because we're telling the truth, and we're pursuing the right course of action for our own people. And, you know, oddly enough, it's not one that is aggressive, really, against other minorities. It's simply saying, we want to keep what belongs to us. We want to see the best for our children, as opposed to sacrificing our children to militant, aggressive, and selfish minorities. And that is only natural, even in the animal kingdom, and it should be natural among whites.
Bill, I know we're coming up on a break. I think a character in the movie Coneheads said, the United States of America can no longer solve the employment crisis for the rest of the universe. And so, certainly, it's not evil to want to protect what's yours and for your people. I mean, it's just irresponsible to think that we can...
James, we're in a break. This is Bill Rowland. James Edwards, I'm leaving. James will be back.
Bill Rowland, thank you for your contributions to the show tonight. Folks, we got an hour left, and I'll be bringing it to you right after these words from our sponsors. You're listening to Political Cesspool.